Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. I am going solo, and I'm not really sure why I'm doing this. I had some games I wanted to talk about, but as you can tell, my voice is shot. I woke up this morning to the sound of my own screams, and it has not gotten any better as the day has gone on. So, bear with me. I got a glass of water next to me. I'm going to tough it out. Because I want to do some deck clearing. I want to clear the plate before we get into all the other shows that we got for the month. We got a little bit delayed with the Pokemon show. So we all three of us will be back together for that when we are ranking the steel types. But until then, I got some games that I want to talk about so that I can close the book. First up, in the official show that I posted about a week ago here, we talked about games coming out in August and there wasn't a whole lot to discuss. We did get some news just the other day about some games that are releasing this month, which is going to be great. Double Kick Heroes is a rhythm game, sort of like a Mad Max dystopian future apocalypse rhythm game that this was featured in a Nintendo Indie Direct. Kind of must have been over a year ago at this point. It's been quite some time since we saw this game, and we really hadn't seen anything else from it since they initially announced it. So we finally got to some more footage. We got like an hour's worth of footage from, I think, some gameplay demos that have been out there. And we got a release date, and it's coming out in just about a week here, which is going to be great. I'm looking forward to that one a lot. And then Gleamlight is the other one we got a release date for, and this one's coming on the 20th. And I probably wouldn't be as excited. I'm most likely going to get it, so I'm excited enough to give this game a shot, unless there's something even bigger that's going to be announced within the next week or so that's coming out on the same day. But, you know, I probably wouldn't be as excited for this game if there was another game coming out, but because the month of August doesn't really have anything high profile, at least at the front of the month, Gleamlight, it kind of gets its chance to shine here just because it has the sort of spotlight to itself. So, if you don't remember this game, there are very strong vibes of Hollow Knight. It shares the same sort of visual style in terms of like the sort of sprites and 2D animation that it's using. It's much more colorful than a Hollow Knight, though. It is supposed to be sort of like a stained glass sort of aesthetic, so much more vibrant game in that way. But like the combat as well is very evocative of Hollow Knight. We'll see. Hopefully it's a little bit shorter. I don't say that because, you know, I have any doubts of the game, you know, could be good, but with all of the longer games I've been playing recently, like, you know, Paper Mario and Xenoblade and Cross Code, I think a shorter game would be nice at this point, which is why I'm also looking forward to Double Kick Heroes. And I also think that, you know, I do like Hollow Knight. That's a good game. But the amount of time you can just spend in that game if you're not using a guide, it's just massive. And I think that sort of Metroidvania formula lends itself to more of a short form, you know, 15, 20 hour affair, you know, for a longer one. So, you know, again, this game, it looks totally fine. If it, you know, is half the game that Hollow Knight is, I think it would be a worthwhile try to give it a shot. So we'll see. We'll see. Maybe there'll be another game that comes out around the same time that totally eclipses it. Maybe it'll get its chance in the spotlight. But another reason I hope it's shorter is because Crystal Chronicles comes out the next week. So I would like to have Gleamlight wrapped up before Crystal Chronicles comes out. Not necessarily, you know, an absolute must to do that, but it would be nice to have the plate cleared for that big game from Square Enix. So, speaking of, speaking of Paper Mario, I finished it, and I don't know that I have really any other thoughts on it to this point. I think I had finished it when I talked about it on the official show last week. I have not gone back to do any 100% thing, but it is something that, you know, I'm strongly considering doing, you know, as I'm clearing the deck of a bunch of other games here, because to me, that was the highlight of the game, is actually going around these environments and having that little kind of hide and seek with all of the different toads and all the different like question blocks and treasure chests. There's a ton of different collectibles that you can grab in that game. And as you get further in the game, you get different badges that will point them out to you, or kind of give you a chime when you are near one. Also, some other games that I've been playing that I talked a little bit on the official show, just give some follow-up on those. I've been playing a bit more of CrossCode now that I cleared out a couple of other games that I have been playing. Curse of the Moon 2 and Carrion, to be specific. But now that those two are, I'm done with them. I plugged back into CrossCode, and I just hit this huge brick wall. I was in a new area, kind of a deserty area, kind of the second major area in the game. It's after the first dungeon. And, you know, a lot of the traversal in the game is dependent on, like, especially when you're looking for treasure chests and collectibles, a lot of it is dependent on a couple of things. One is finding your way up elevation, and you can do that by, you know, having the correct steps up a cliff. You can't just climb any cliff as if it's Breath of the Wild. You need to have, like, okay, you need to go up this half step, then you can go up the full step, so on and so forth. And this is sometimes you can get, like, 3-4 steps high in a given area. So there's a lot of, like, maneuvering around and poking around at the wall, at the seams, and, like, seeing how far you can jump from one cliff to the next in order to, you know, access different areas. And I wasn't making very good progress in this desert area with that. So it's kind of like sort of mainlining the story, the critical path. And then I got to a fight, and it wasn't a scripted loss, and it wasn't a necessary win either, but it was a character who, you know, I wanted to win this fight, but I lost the fight, and I figured I'll just gain a couple of levels, I'll come back, and I'll win. So I, you know, loaded a previous save, which was just before, and I went out and started fighting enemies. But the level up system in this game doesn't really afford you the opportunity or the ability to grind out levels. Because once you sort of get at parity with the just random enemies throughout the environment, you're not gaining much experience off of your victories. So it takes just a ton of beating your head against the wall to gain any sort of level progression at that point. So as I was, I decided I was not going to do that. So I figured, okay, let's go get some new equipment. And the equipment in this game kind of works in a funny way. There are equipment shops where you can just kind of buy basic gear that kind of corresponds to your general level. But the pieces of equipment that you can acquire in this game will kind of tell you, like, hey, if you are at level 26, and this is level 30 equipment, you're going to get a pretty significant boost off of this. It will, of course, let you equip it. It's not like, you know, you're gated off from using that equipment until you reach the appropriate level. But it gives you this idea, like, this equipment is definitely going to be a step above what you can just get from the rando shop. And the way that you sort of get that gear is you have to engage with this loot system, which is obtuse. Or I guess opaque might be a better word. I don't know. I'm really into those two words recently. You might hear them a lot over the next several weeks. So the equipment that, you know, I was able to, or I had the option to craft in the, furthest town in the progression I got to that point was, I'm a level 26 and this was level 30 equipment. So this will give me, you know, the boost that I need in order to win this fight. And I was looking through all of like the different shops, because instead of having like this one centralized area where you can get or craft all of your gear, there are just these stalls scattered throughout the town. And some of it will be like, okay, well, here's where you can craft healing items or defensive gear, or here's some offensive gear over here, and here's some offensive gear over there. And craft, like, it'll tell you how much of what you need in order to build it, but then there's no way to, outside of looking on the internet, figure out where you are going to go in order to craft that gear. So I was like, okay, I can't craft anything right now, so I sat back into the area and I started looking at a guide just to try to figure out how to traverse the world that I was in and get some tips. And I started to get used to it, collected a lot of treasure, got a lot of loot, and then I went back and I still couldn't craft anything. And I just got so sick of trying to engage with this system that I could not make any progress on. I had like 3 play sessions of like an hour, hour and a half each, where I was making zero progress because I was finding stuff, I was finding loot, but I wasn't able to turn that into anything tangible to make the character better. So, you know, and there are some small things that they could have done or still could do if they chose to patch it that would just make it so much more friendly to say, okay, I need to find this gear, this loot, and this loot in order to make the thing that I want. And that just like allow you to just have the game like mark, here's where the enemies are that you need to fight, or here's like the bushes that you need to chop down in order to gather the things you need to gather. And just give you those spots on your map that will say, just go here and do this thing and you'll find the thing you need. And that's something I'm going to probably bring up Xenoblade a lot. That's something that they let you do in Xenoblade. That the game does it for you. If you have a side quest where, you know, you need to gather this certain thing, it will mark it on the map. There's where it is. Go grab it. So, you know, and generally speaking, the map in CrossCut is okay. It's nothing special. It's a bunch of gray blocks that they do have names. So, you know, if you have a side quest, it's like, go to this area. You can just find it on your map using its name, which will tell you in the side quest. And there are fast travel points. There's not a fast travel point in every section, but there's usually 3 or 4. So, you know, it works well for side quests that say go to specific areas. But, you know, with these maps and big RPGs with a lot of side quests and a lot of loot and a lot of collectibles, you know, the more information there, the better. Like, and even if it's just like, you know, that you hover over one of the gray blocks as a section of the map and it tells you, here's the enemies you'll find there, or here's the loot that you'll be able to find there. It would make it so much more streamlined to engage with the crafting system. Because at this point, like, at that point, when I had been trying to, you know, play the game the way that the game wants me to play it, and making no progress, I was like, fuck it. And I dropped the difficulty because I was just tired of not being able to move forward. And they do give you some nuance with dropping the difficulty. There's, I guess, sort of like progression bars or percentage bars. And it has to do with like how much damage you're taking, how aggressive enemies are. And I pretty much dropped all those to about 60-70%. And I was able to get through the fight I wanted to get to. And I was able to actually enter the second dungeon that I'd been wanting to play through. So that's where I'm at this point. I'm in the middle of that second dungeon. I'm assuming there's probably 4 or 5 dungeons in this game, just kind of based on how long I've been playing. And you unlock new skill grids when you beat or get to a certain point in the dungeon. So I have 2 of those now and 2 more nodes to kind of activate skill grids in. So I assume like once I get all 4 of those, maybe there'll be another dungeon or 2 before I'm at the end of the game. We'll see. There might be more. But I like these dungeons because there's some very clever puzzles in there. And, you know, a lot of them revolve around activating switches. But the way the game uses projectiles they come up with some really clever ways and new ways to, you know, have sort of elemental alignments with your projectiles and your attacks, and having to ricochet shots in certain ways. And, you know, a lot of times there are several puzzles in these dungeons that, you know, are real head scratchers. And, you know, I think they do a good job of kind of spacing those out where, you know, you have, you know, rooms that you're able to figure out on your own. And then you have certain rooms where like, okay, what the hell do they want me to do here? And it feels like a nice balance inside those. And you know, it's, the dungeons, the second dungeon is interesting because it has a lot more of like vertically connected rooms rather than just kind of like find the key and move horizontally or laterally to the next room. You have to, you know, use points where you fall through floors in order to get to spots on the lower floor that you weren't able to get to before. So yeah, I'm pleased with how well they've been able to design these dungeons and the puzzles and the progression inside. Again, more information on a map is always welcome, especially when it comes to like treasure chests. So far, I have not found any sort of like compass, to put it in Zelda terms, to mark where these treasure chests are so I can hunt them down if I want to. And that's something that would be really nice. What they do allow you to do in dungeons and in the overworld is if you spot a treasure chest, you can put it, and you don't know how to get to it, you can put a marker down and it will tell you there are 29 treasure chests in this area or 20 treasure chests in this dungeon, and it will kind of keep track of how many you found. But man, at a certain point, like if I have found 18 of them, I don't feel like wandering. You know, I want to figure out the puzzle to get them. I don't want to try to find where the puzzle is and then figure it out. But anyway, so I'm going to finish this game, but it is going to be a slow grind. I'm really feeling the length of it. I've only put in about 13 hours. It feels like 26. And I think it's especially because the traversal puzzles in the overworld can just sometimes be just too opaque. Just like the way that you need to move throughout the overworld in order to like find your collectibles and your loot and just to get to the next area can sometimes just be a little too much of a chore than it should. I mean, it probably wouldn't be as tedious if engaging in combat actually netted you more EXP, so you could always feel like you were making some sort of progression. But, you know, so you might not be able to move very far in the world, but at least you're gaining experience and at least you're gaining levels and improving your character. At some points in this game, like I was saying before, like if I'm not able to figure out anything in the overworld and I'm not gaining any meaningful loot and I'm not gaining any meaningful experience for levels, hello cat, then, you know, I feel like I have these wasted play sessions. I'm going to end on a positive note, though, and say it's a nice-looking game. There's a lot of skill trees that you can fill up and experiment with that adds some extra layers to the combat in terms of like the sort of special moves that you're able to pull off. I can see the appeal of this game. It really does remind me of Xenoblade in a lot of ways, and in a lot of ways that I like. There are just times where I just wish it was more friendly in ways that Xenoblade is friendly to help keep you moving forward. So, another game that I've been playing recently, I downloaded this one for $3 a few weeks ago when it was on sale, is Mabel in the Wood. And this game is a bit of a mess. It's a little bit Shantae with worse stage design and less fun transformations. And it's a little bit Celeste with easier challenges and worse checkpoints, if that makes much sense. So the platforming challenges, kind of put it into its own terms, platforming challenges are uneven. It goes from these vertical challenges, which is making a lot of jumps. And it mixes them with these areas of just where it's like a walking simulator, where you're not doing a whole hell of a lot. The combat is unnecessary and silly. So just by way of example, you're not able to do much as just a little human character, as a little redhead girl, and she's dragging around a sword, moves very slowly, just kind of plods along, dragging her sword. And how you're doing a lot of your locomotion is by transforming into different forms, such as the first one you get is a fairy. And the fairy allows you free range of movement, both horizontally and vertically, for a certain amount of time. And then you automatically transfer back into the human form. There's a little meter that'll tell you when you're going to switch back. But what happens, though, is the sword is too big when you are flying around as a fairy. So then you tap the button to recall your sword, and the sword flings back to you. And if there are enemies in between you and the sword, they will get hit with it and take damage, usually killing them. Where it gets messy is when you get into a lot of flying enemies, or you get into areas where you don't have a whole lot of room to fly around and land, or you start running out of time over a pit and there are a lot of flying enemies in your way. It just doesn't feel very intuitive to engage in combat in this way. And it only gets worse when you have more transformations. For example, another one you get, I think it's the second one, is a spider. And the spider, you're able to shoot a strand of silk into a wall or ceiling, kind of pull yourself toward that. And that's just very finicky, because you can shoot a strand and it can hit things off screen. But you don't get very good feedback to where you've made a good connection or not. So, you know, you could have been like flying around or flinging yourself around, and you could know there's something I can cling on to up there using the spider silk. So you do it, and then you start trying to pull yourself up, but you didn't make contact. So you're just kind of like left in this limbo state where you're frozen for a bit because the strand hasn't made contact yet. It makes contact with something, and then you start pulling yourself going off in a weird direction, or you could be under attack at the same time. It's just so clumsy the way that they've done this. And just keep it going. The third one, kind of turn yourself into a stone statue. And it's also your dash, which feels unintuitive. And it's also a bit unreliable how much you're going to dash. Because there have been times where I've done a dash to damage an enemy, took it out, and I'm fine. And the next time I've done it, I fling myself off a cliff in the same direction, so I end up going further. It's very, very strange. I mentioned the plodding movement, and the imprecise transformations. It's hard to be sure if you're even going in the right direction when you're in sort of like dungeon area. I did just complete a area that gave me a map. It wasn't particularly useful, except for showing me where my character was on the map, kind of like how a compass would in Zelda. Show you your position in the dungeon. This game, it feels like a first effort, and not a particularly great one, and especially when it comes to technical issues, because there was a time I was playing the game and there were three enemies on screen, and the game slowed to an absolute crawl, which is crazy because it's a sort of pixel art style game. It doesn't even look as good as Shovel Knight, and it has performance issues. And there are times where there are sluggish loads when you're doing screen pulls. I think these sort of things like shouldn't be acceptable in a technically sound game. So, and like I mentioned, it's not as impressive as something as a Shovel Knight or Celeste. Games that also use this pixel art style have a whole lot more going on and are able to run effectively. So, I only paid like $3 for it. It's not a new game, so it'll probably be cheap again, but this is a game that you should avoid. Take a hard pass on this one. Turn the page. Like I mentioned, I also finished Carrion, which is that sort of role reversal infestation sort of game where you're taking the role of the monster, taking over the sort of scientific outpost sort of thing. But, you know, speaking of games that don't have enough information available on the map, seems to be a running theme throughout this particular mini show. the lack of a map. Like, this game just did not have one. And the lack of the map kept me going back from 100% completing the game, which is a shame, because this game does some really smart things with the Metroid formula. And I talked a little bit, back when I could talk, about how the game would strip away skills from you even as you're progressing, and then gave them back when you had completed an area. And it's such an interesting idea for a Metroid game, where you have sort of skills associated with how much health you have, and then having these necessary moments where you have to purposely decrease your own health so you can access skills that are associated with weaker versions of yourself. And this game, like, it's something that you've rarely ever seen in a Metroidvania, if at all before. I think there are some points in Metroid games where you have to take a step back and use a different set of skills. The one that first comes to mind is Metroid Zero Mission, where you have to play through the Zero Suit. And it's not an entirely accurate comparison, because that changes up your skills completely. And I think there might have been one or two other Metroid games where you have to go through a point with limited access to other skills. Anyway, it's such an interesting idea, because you hardly ever see it, and this game makes it a core mechanic. You have to do it all the time throughout the progression of the game, where you're having to leave parts of your infestation in your, there's a virus-like body behind, because having a smaller mass gives you access to skills that you lose as you get larger. And oftentimes, you know, you get skills as you get larger that are more effective for taking out enemies. So, you know, you have to make yourself more ineffective in order to go to the next area. And a lot of times you're fighting, you know, enemies that you were fighting when you were better. And they always give you ways to be sneaky. You can try to, like, plow forward and kill all the enemies using nothing but brute force, but there's also always a way to finesse it. And it's really, really smart. So, near the end of the game, you get to a room that reveals the sort of, like, the collectibles that you missed. They do have some running counters as you move throughout the game, but I didn't start encountering those until very late. So I think the game does intend for you to do some backtracking when you get to the end, when you, like, fully maxed out all of your skills. But I'm not sure what you get for it, but there's no way in hell that I would ever find my way around to getting these collectibles, let alone finding my way back to where I need to be. Because the game, to its credit, does a good job of guiding you forward to the next area you need to be to keep the game moving forward. I didn't really spend much time at all wandering where I was supposed to go next. But if I had to start back, working my way backwards in order to find collectibles, I don't think I would ever find my way back to the end of the game. So, and I'm not even sure what you get for it. I don't even know what, if it's going to give you, like, a better narrative ending, if it's going to give you a different skill, or some of our new game plus, or whatever. I mean, if it's a narrative thing, I don't give a fuck. And I was able to finish the game without, like, any more new skills, so it wasn't like that was a big deal either. But I just can't think of a reason why they wouldn't even give you a map in this game. And I looked through the options, and I was trying all the different buttons. I don't think I've missed something. It's possible that I did. But I don't know. At this point, it seems unlikely. If they didn't, like, give you a map you can just access at any point, like, just like a map room so you can go there, get your bearings, get a little bit of information, kind of center yourself and decide where you want to go next if you want to sort of backtrack and try to use your newfound skills in areas you've been to before, because it is something you can do, and there is benefit to doing that. So, you know, if they didn't want to give you a map you could access at all times, just maybe something that would give you, you know, a snapshot of information. Although, to be fair, I would just take a screenshot of it and abuse it. So, what this ends up doing is you just cannot leave this game alone for a few days and come back to it. You'd be totally lost. This is a game, and it's not a long game. I think it took like 4 or 5 hours to finish. This is a game that'd be good to play, like if you have like a long weekend or a weekend, you know, where it's going to be raining and you get to be inside all day. Or, you know, if you're just like a shut-in recluse like I would like to be and play video games all day. Also a good game to play through a weekend if you're that person. But this game has such interesting ideas and mechanics. Like, taking over a human using one of your upgraded skills. And because it gives you just this different way of interacting with the game. Not only, like, environmental elements of the game, like switches and levers and shit like that. But also, like, the way you interact with other, like, human characters in the game. Because if you're stealthy enough, there are points where you can, you know, take over the body of a person and ambush your opponents. Because they don't realize that you're an infested human being. And it's just such an interesting way of changing the way you interact with the game without, like, fundamentally changing the actual character that you are playing as. And I've talked before during the show and on the previous show about leaving your biomass behind to gain access to previous skills. But what if you could split, like, actually split into two, leave some biomass behind, and then had to kind of tag back and forth between the two in order to kind of solve these sort of like dual, like Luigi's Mansion-esque puzzles where you had to have like Luigi and Gooluigi working in tandem. I'd love to see them do a sequel and take these ideas further, you know, as long as they make it with a map. But, you know, if you got like a few day stretch where you're able to dedicate time to this game, 4 or 5 hours, and just be able to play through the whole thing, I recommend it. This game has such smart, interesting ideas in there. And last but not least, the game that I've been playing to kind of cap off the I don't know, clear off the deck, clear the plate of all the stuff that I've been playing recently. I've been, of course, back into Xenoblade. Now that I've finished off Paper Mario, I am going to get into spoilers, and I'm going to get into spoilers right away. So if you are still playing the game, I think I am in Chapter 8. So I actually have it running right now because I'm hoping to get some Starfall in the Aerith Sea, because there's a monster I need to beat up during those conditions. So if you are previous to Chapter 8, you should definitely cut it off here because it's a pretty big spoiler. And that spoiler is, you get Fiora back in your party after she was presumed dead. For, you know, it's really the inciting incident of the game. It's why Shulk and Reiner are on this journey. It's a journey of revenge. So, I got her back in the party. And I immediately started working on side quests again. Because my next major destination is the Makanis. Which I suppose maybe is another spoiler in the game. They eventually go there, which, you know, I think a lot of people just kind of presume that you'll eventually end up on that thing. But I still have a good chunk of the game to get to. And I am still taking it very slow. I spent a lot of time knocking out as many like heart-to-heart conversations as I had available to me at the time. And God, this game is so friendly in the way that just gives you all these checklists to tick off. There's a handy little log for all of your heart-to-heart conversations. And you can kind of filter it to just have it show you which ones that you're able to do at the moment based on your affinity levels between your characters. And it'll tell you where they are. You just kind of go there and scroll around on your map until, you know, you see a little icon. You go there and you do them. But yeah, I'm going to be doing a few more side quests and probably do a little bit more Colony 6 rebuilding before I continue on to the Makanis. Because I do want to continue to build affinity and just kind of wandering around looking for collectibles helps with that, because you're able to gift them back and forth between all the characters. And, you know, I actually have done some maxing out of affinity. Like, Shulk has max affinity with both Ryan and Sherlock. It has a pretty heavily used party in the early goings of the game. And I'm nearly there with both Dunban and Fiora. I've been using Dunban a lot, and Shulk and Fiora just kind of have high affinity out of the box once you get her back in the party. But using those collectibles as gifts kind of helps elevate everyone else to where, you know, you can not have to grind away in battles in order to build up this affinity, or grind away in side quests, mixing up the party to build affinity. I know there are times where I wish side quests would repopulate, like especially ones where it's just like, oh, go kill the monster, go collect these things, repopulate those so I can do them again, just to help build up affinity. Is one of the quickest ways to do it. But Ricky and Melia are always a challenge to build up affinity. Melia, because she just doesn't figure into the, or factor into the break, topple, daze combo. I think she may have an art or two that does break, but I really need to sit down and figure out that character, or watch a video where that character really gets broken down and how to use her, because her ether skills can be very effective, and there's going to be a point in the game where she's necessary to use. Spoilers. But I would like to be able to use her effectively. And Ricky, I hardly ever use in the party, you know, almost for the same reason, but he can also just be annoying because he does a lot of the same shout-outs and noises that all the other characters do, but his higher-pitched voice is kind of like nails on a chalkboard to me. I was looking at some pretty decent builds, and he's pretty good at like putting these status ailments and debuffs on enemies, so I might go with that and run with him in the party for a few side quests, just kind of build him up a bit. But God, this game, you know, in contrast to a lot of the other things I've been saying about these other games tonight, it just makes it so easy to just do little things and always feel like you're progressing, that you're accomplishing something, whether it's just filling out a collectopedia, or doing a couple of little side quests, or discovering a landmark, or just building up some affinity, or making some gems. Like, there are so many little things that that build up into something bigger, and even if you just do a few little things, you don't feel like you've wasted any time in the game. And again, having so much information available to you, just on the map or in quest logs and stuff, helps out a ton. I mean, there wouldn't be, you know, it would be nice, like I was mentioning this about Crossco, but it would be nice if you could set targets, like, hey, I want to find this one collectible, let me set it as a target, and kind of help reveal where it is on the map. But, you know, harvesting, targets, like, for monsters, like, I need to harvest this piece of loot from a monster. Let me show me where I can target the monsters so I can just go there and just fight them until I get the thing that I need. And harvesting collectibles and monster parts for Colony 6 would be so much easier if I was able to do that. I mean, it's not such a big deal as it is, because you just always jump on the internet and there's a ton of like helpful information out there. But being able to do it in game would just kind of streamline things so much more. This game like streamlines so many things so well. I know one more thing wouldn't hurt. Go ahead and patch that. I know you're listening. But, God, I just love the way this game looks and sounds. The battle system is great. I do need to mention that I was listening to another podcast, the Friend Code podcast, and they're having a discussion about the battle system. And I need to point out that they're absolutely wrong about Xenoblade 2. All three of the panelists on that particular podcast were just going on at some length about how the battle system in Xenoblade 1 is better than Xenoblade 2, because Xenoblade 2 is too complex. And, you know, I strongly disagree. I like the battle system in Xenoblade 1. I think it is very effective, and it has an appropriate amount of depth. But the battle system in Xenoblade 2, yes, it is complex. But I think at a certain point with most video games, you have to be willing to engage with the game on its terms. And when you allow yourself to just engage with the Xenoblade 2 battle system and really learn what it is that you're doing and how you're going to be effective and what everything in it means. And I'll admit that it can be difficult to figure everything out. It is good to have a Sherpa to kind of help introduce you to what everything is, because there's a lot there and the game doesn't do a tremendous job of showing you everything. But once you figure it out, it really is just like conducting this symphony, and you are this maestro, and all of these little things are happening, and you are manipulating them all in order to build up to this much bigger thing, to, you know, you finally pull off your ultimate attack and do like 11 million points of damage, and you're destroying these really powerful, gigantic bosses and pulling off these, engaging these really great fights. And there's a level of improvisation to it, because you know your partner characters, your party members are not going to behave the same way every time, and you need to learn to roll with it and know that, you know, if you do certain things, they'll be more likely to do certain other things, but sometimes they won't. They'll use a different special move, and that'll build toward a different blade combo, and you need to, you know, be able to improvise and roll with that and figure out on the fly what it is you're going to build toward next. I highly recommend it. The Xenoblade 2 battle system is one of, if not the best battle system I've ever engaged with in an RPG. It's just so good, the way that you're able to strategize and improvise at the same time, and just that the balance that they strike there. Yes, it is complicated, but when you just get in there and allow yourself to meet the game on its level and engage with it and figure it out, that is what, it's the most satisfying battle system that I've played in an RPG. And while I'm at it, while I'm on this tirade of calling out other podcasts, I was listening to Axe of the Blood God, which is an RPG podcast from US Gamer. They had a few panelists on that show, and they were complaining about the battles in Octopath Traveler and how they took too long. And you were, you know, fighting these random battles that took you, you know, 2-3 minutes. And first of all, no. And again, this is a symptom of, as far as I can tell, needing to engage the game on its level and knowing and figuring out what it is the game actually wants you to do. And Octopath Traveler has this really beautiful battle system in that you are in an area, you go to, you know, the next area of the game on your map, your intention or whatever, and you, first of all, you encounter things, you figure out their weaknesses, you figure out, as you fight more battles, you're figuring out the types of formations they're going to throw at you, and from there you're constructing your party. Like in Octopath Traveler, you should never just play with your favorite characters. You should always be switching out the party in order to optimize the skill, the battle. So bring in the skills that you need in order to most effectively take out the enemies in the quickest way possible. And when you get to that point and you really figure out what it is that you need and what skills you need and how the enemies are going to configure themselves against you, and when you need to burn as all of the turns that you can in order just to do as big a strike as possible. Like, that there's a micro level to the strategy, and there's a macro level to the strategy. And the micro level is, what is this enemy weak against, and how do I take out this individual enemy and this party of enemies as quickly as possible? And the macro level of that is, okay, now how do I construct the party so it is going to be most effective at taking out these enemy parties as quickly as possible? And once you get to that point in any given dungeon, and it doesn't take all that long, it probably takes longer for me to explain it than it does to actually do it, then you're winning these fights quickly, and then you're building experience, and then you're gaining levels. And you know, and again, it's just a willingness to engage with the game and say, okay, what is the game showing me that I need to do? Rather than like, no, I like this character, I want to use this character because it's my favorite. And I think that that's one of the really amazing things about Octopath Traveler is that, you know, as long as you are willing to mix it up and figure out the puzzle that the game is presenting you, you don't need to do things like grind or take 2 or 3 minutes to finish a fight. You can get through the game effectively when you solve it. I think that's kind of the fundamental difference between, you know, engaging with the game and playing the game the way you want it to play. You have to be willing to play ball with the developers, the people who make the game, and find out what it is that they want you to figure out. I think it's one of the fundamental differences between sort of a JRPG and a Western RPG, as I understand it, because Western RPGs want to afford you this freedom to play the game the way you want to play, make the character the way you want to play, and engage with the narrative the way you want to. And to me, it's far more interesting to figure it out, to solve the puzzle, to unravel the sort of thread that the developer wants you to figure out, and how they think the game should be played. I don't know. To me, that's much more interesting. But I don't know. It was weird. I disagree with the battle system in Octopath Traveler being bad. Because none of the panelists on that particular podcast really liked the system. And they do have a panelist that wasn't on this show, this episode, that did like Octopath Traveler. So it's not like they're just, you know, a group of people that dislike the game. They hardly ever talk about it anyway. And it was also weird because they were talking about like RPGs with no combat system and how it would be interesting to have an RPG that didn't have combat. And to me, that's baffling. Because to me, that's your primary mechanism of gameplay in a role-playing game is these fights and figuring out, you know, the strategies of these fights. And I don't know, like they're talking about like doing more things that were engaging in like dialogue trees. And to me, it just sounds like at that point you got a visual novel, which isn't my cup of tea. But anyway, I digress. Back to Xenoblade. I love this game. Xenoblade, it's a modern masterpiece for streamlining so many aspects of JRPGs. Monolith created a world that just feels good to occupy. It's a lot like, you know, a Breath of the Wild in that way. Or I guess Breath of the Wild is a lot like Xenoblade in that way. And that you have like this visually striking, interesting world that it's just fun to move around in. And Breath of the Wild takes us to the next level by giving you so many more ways to interact with it. And I think most of all is Xenoblade just stands the test of time. They made some small improvements, some welcome improvements, but the majority of the game remains unchanged. And I think that is to the game's credit. It's a testament to how good it is. Highly recommended. So, before I close out here, I did want to talk a little bit about one more topic. And that's some port begging. I want to do some port begging. Because I announced just the other day, Pikmin 3 is coming to Switch. And it's a Wii U port. We're going to get to that and all of the topics surrounding that announcement on the official show at the end of the month. So, look forward to that. But now, it is time for more port begging. Because, you know, now's as good a time as any. So there are a bunch of games that I was just kind of going through my my Amazon wish lists for other systems, and you know I also put some Wii U games in here as well because if I get them, I might as well port them all at this point. I would really love to see a Dead Space collection. You know, if EA is in the mood to make some more Switch games. It'd be really cool to see the Dead Space games, including Extraction, on the Switch on a card or on a couple of cards, however they manage to do it. That's a series that, you know, the only way I've played that game is Extraction. That's the only game in the series that I've played. So I've always wanted to play through the rest of them. But I have not owned a non-Nintendo system since the PS2. So if they bring it to Switch, even better. I'd also like to see Resonance of Fate, which I think was a Tri-Ace, maybe? I think Sega published that one. Anyway, or was it Namco? It was Tri-Ace, it was probably Namco. I should have done some research. Shut up. I'd love to see that game come to Switch because it's such an interesting looking RPG. Just like the visual style of Resonance of Fate is really, really cool. Sounded kind of like this this postmodern gothic industrialist sort of futuristic kind of thing. It's really, really nice. It would also be really cool to, speaking of PlayStation 3 games I've never played, Final Fantasy 13. Like, get a collection of Final Fantasy 13 games because there's like three of them. And bring it over to Switch. I don't think Square Enix should stop at 12. Just keep on bringing them over. And speaking of Wii U ports, there are a handful left that I think would be cool to just bring over to Switch so that more people have access to them. First of all, Twilight Princess HD, Wind Waker HD. I think that you got to do those at some point. Especially Twilight Princess. Like, that's a Zelda game that has been on every Nintendo system for the past three generations. Go ahead and bring it to Switch. Keep it running. Keep the streak going. Let's have Twilight Princess on every Nintendo system going forward. Also, Xenoblade Chronicles X. And you can get all three of the Xenoblade games on Switch. Because I really love the exploration in Chronicles X. I think that of all three of the Xenoblade games, I think I like the exploration in X the most. Just because they give you so, like, the world is so big and they give you so many places to go and a lot of different ways to get there. You're kind of set free in this big world, which is not something it's just like the only Xenoblade game that has done that so far. It's the only one that just kind of gives you this automatic free range of movement, you know, as long as we're able to sneak around the super powerful enemies. Super Mario 3D World, of course, I think is the one that everyone is hoping for at this point and everyone's expecting at this point. Sure, why not? That's a game. And most of these I wouldn't personally double dip on, but I think that's one that, you know, the kids really like, really like playing the Wii U. It'd be great to be able to let them play it on the Switch because it's just easier to get controllers together for the Switch. Also, NES Remix Collection. I can't see why they haven't done that one yet. I think that one's a no-brainer. You got to bring those over at some point, or even just as digital downloads. Metroid Prime Trilogy, that's an often rumored one, but one that just kind of refuses to show up. And sure, why not? Again, like, I own it on Wii U, so I have no reason to buy it again. But like, if people haven't played these Metroid Prime games before, like, the audience is just so much vaster on Switch than it has been for these games on GameCube or Wii U or even Wii, because the Wii was a different sort of audience. And I think that people would be much more willing to engage with the Metroid game, just the sort of audience the Switch has compared to the Wii. Fatal Frame, Maiden of Blackwater, or a new one. I would love a new Fatal Frame, but, you know, it's funny that Nintendo owns the franchise now. Like, they bought that, or like the publishing rights from Koei Tecmo. It'd be nice to see them use it, or, you know, have Koei Tecmo make a game and have Nintendo publish it and use that franchise, because it is a really interesting horror franchise that I really have gotten into over the past few years. And last up of the Wii U port, I would love to see Affordable Space Adventures, which was a Wii U eShop exclusive game that did have some asynchronous multiplayer that used the gamepad, but I think with some creative button mapping and multiple controllers, you could make it work on Wii U. You might have like an ugly HUD display or something, but it is such a fun multiplayer game. Like a cooperative multiplayer game, that it'd be a shame if that game never got brought forward onto other systems. I think it was, I can't remember who published that one. I was about to say Panic Mode, but I think I might be thinking of Panic Button, and they didn't do it. I don't know. Anyway, I digress. The last game that I have listed here in my notes that I would love to see a port or an HD remaster to Wii U is the Fire Emblem Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn. Just do a collection with those two, because those are my two favorite Fire Emblem games. Those games, I love them so much. Mostly because of the Grail Mercenaries, sort of cast of characters, and how you're just kind of given this party that synergizes together really well. And of course, you do get like other characters you can bring in or sub out in typical Fire Emblem fashion. But I really love that core group and the sort of dynamic that they have together with the sort of weapons and character classes that they have. But anyway, I've been rambling for almost an hour here, so I'm going to close it out. Next up, we are going to do the Pokemon show. We're going to record it in a couple of days, but I probably won't be posting that one until the 14th. Give myself a little bit of time to edit that one and hopefully get another show in the can before. I'm trying to kind of stay ahead of the game here. But anyway, after the Pokemon show, we will be doing the retro show, which is mostly going to be Gauntlet Legends. I think there's one other game that our Nintendo 64 game that we might mention, but Gauntlet Legends is going to be the big topic, and also Command and Conquer Tiberian Sun, which might be the last Command and Conquer game that I played, and I really love that game. I'm actually considering tracking it down and downloading just to kind of give myself a refresher of it, because I really, really like those old school RTSs. And then we will wrap it all up at the end of the month with the official show, where we'll have new releases to talk about. We'll at least have Double Kick Heroes, maybe Gleamlight, and Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. We'll have some games. So that'll be exciting. And I've had Xenoblade running this whole show, and I've not once seen a Starfall in Aerithsea. I need to kill that boss. I need to kill it, and I need Starfall to do it. Anyway, till next time, everybody.